Thus, by meditation, they achieve the ultimate reality, which is unthinkable, unmanifest, the one of endless forms, the ever auspicious, the peaceful, the immortal, the origin of the Creator, the one without a beginning, a middle, and an end, the only one, the non-dual, the all-pervading, the consciousness, the bliss, the formless, the wonderful.
This sutra is basically concerned with meditation. What is to be attained by meditation? What is meditation and for what it stands? The Indian word is dhyana for meditation. The connotation is very much different. By meditation, something else is meaningless. By dhyana, something else is meant. So first we must understand the basic difference between these two words. Meditation is not a right translation, because by meditation, thinking is implied. When we say someone is meditating, it means someone is thinking about something. In meditation, an object is implied. In dhyana, no object is a basic condition. By dhyana is meant a meditative mood without any object. Objects must cease. Mind must become just a pure mirror, a mirroring, not mirroring anything. Just a mirror without any object in it, a pure mirror. By dhyana, this purity of the mind is indicated. So first, no object should be in the mind. Mind must remain alone, without thinking about anything, with no thought, just a consciousness, just an awareness, just an alertness. This alertness without any object is meditation. So go on dropping objects. Even if one has to use some object, as a help to withdraw other objects from the mind, that one object has to be dropped ultimately. Unless that is dropped, it is not meditation. For example, there are many thoughts in the mind. You can use a mantra. So many thoughts are not there now, one thought. You can use a name, Ram, Krishna, Jesus, Maria, anything. You go on repeating Ram, 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 Ram. Between two Rams, no gap should be left. Because from that gap only, a thought enters. So if your Ramas go on overlapping each other, there will be no gap for any thought to enter. Now you have a mind with one thought. It is still not meditation. It is still thinking. Thinking of one thought. Ultimately, this Ram has to be dropped. When you have become attuned with one thought and other thoughts are not entering the mind, then drop it. and remain without thought. Many thoughts have been dropped by one, then drop the one. So you come to a state of no thought. This state of no thought is meditation. This is dhyana. This is pure consciousness. In this pure consciousness is achieved that which is known as Brahma. This sutra is concerned with the definition of that indefinable. It cannot be defined, because definition needs something which becomes impossible with the ultimate reality. Definition needs comparison. You cannot define anything without comparing it. That divine is non-dual. It is one. So no comparison is possible. How to define it? Can you say that divine is man or woman? You cannot say. Though many religions have defined in that way. Some religions are man-oriented, so they define God as Father. Some religions are woman-oriented, so they define God as Mother. But He cannot be defined, because man and woman, these words are relevant in human language. They become irrelevant for the whole universe. The whole universe is neither male nor female. How to define it? What to say about it? The moment we use any word to define it, it looks absurd, because every human word implies the contrary also. If you say he is light, then where to put darkness? Then what is darkness? Either you will have to deny darkness absolutely from divine nature, or you will have to imply it somewhere. He must comprehend darkness also. So what to say about him, light or darkness? If you say both, they become meaningless. He is both, and he is both not. That is the problem. That's why he cannot be defined. Every word implies duality. The opposite polar must be there to make the word meaningful. Every word with the total existence becomes meaningless. But this sutra tries to define the undefinable. This is an effort only. It succeeds never, but it has to be made. Even in its unsuccessfulness, it helps. It indicates. It may not be able to define the divine. It is capable to indicate it. Wittgenstein has said somewhere that there are experiences which cannot be said, but which can be sought. And he is right. There are experiences you cannot say what they are, but still you can indicate them. This sutra is an indication. Some terms have been used. One is, thus by meditation they achieve the ultimate reality, which is unthinkable, which cannot be thought. Why? because thinking is not a process, is not a door towards the unknown and the unknowable. Thinking can think only that which is known. Thinking is a process of the known. It never leads to the unknown. The unknown is always beyond thinking. You can think something you know. How can you think something which you don't know? And then the whole thinking becomes absurd. If you can think only that which you know, what is the use of it? You know already, so what is the use of thinking it? If only known can be thought, then the whole process becomes circular. It leads nowhere. You go on in a circle. You know and you think. And you think and you cannot think the unknown. So you go on in a circle. Mind works in a circle. The mind never achieves anything from the unknown. So mind must cease. Thinking must cease. This circle must be broken. You must come to a standstill. Not thinking at all. And the moment you are in a no thinking state, suddenly you enter the unknown. It is not only unknown, but unknowable also. Because even if you have known it, you cannot make it known to others. By our being, they may feel it. By our movements, by our gestures, by our eyes, by our very presence, they may feel it, but still you cannot make it known to them. You may create a thirst in them for it, but you cannot give them a definition. You may lead them towards it, but you cannot make it known to them unless they know themselves. This knowing of the unknown is basically, foundationally, an individual affair. It can never be made collective. You cannot go to it en masse. Alone one has to reach it. Alone one has to drop oneself. Alone one has to enter it. Alone one encounters it. It becomes known to you, but you cannot make it known to others. That is the basic difference between science and religion. A scientist discovers something, then the discovery becomes of the whole humanity. But a religious mystic discovers, and the discovery remains to be his own. It never becomes a collective phenomenon. A Jesus knows, a Bohme knows, a Eckhart knows, but they are helpless. They cannot make it a common property. It cannot become an object of common knowing. Humanity remains in the same grip of ignorance. Each one has to approach it by oneself. The opening is individual. That's why it is not only unknown but unknowable, and for one reason more, and that reason is still deeper. Even one comes to know it, one never knows it totally. Even one comes to know it, one never knows it totally. The unknowable is infinitely unknowable. Even if you are satisfied, even your thirst is no more, the infinite unknowability remains. That's why it is mysterious. And it is good and it is beautiful that it is so. Because if you can know the divine totally, the very moment the divine has known, you have known it totally, it becomes meaningless. Anything known totally becomes a thing. Anything known totally creates boredom. Anything known totally will again create a new thirst to know something else. But once the divine is known, no desire to know anything remains. Because you can go on in your knowing deeper, 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 infinitely deeper. The abyss is endless. You have a beginning in it, but no end. You drop in it, then you go on dropping. And there comes no substratum, no bottom, where you can stand again and say, now the dropping has ended. This is the mystery. That's why the sutra says, the formless, the wonderful, the mysterious. God is a mysterium. And when I say a mysterium, I mean that you can know it, but still you cannot say that I have known it. You can only say I have dropped in it. You can only say I have ceased to be. You can only say now I am no more and he is. But you cannot say that I have known it. For one reason more, it remains unknowable because the knower is lost. The moment you enter the divine, you don't enter as a knower. You enter as a drop of water entering the ocean. You become one with it. The knower is not separate. So how can you say that I have known it? How can you say that I am still? You are not. Only he is. This is one of the riddles of religious experience. When the knower is lost, the known is known. When the knower is lost, only then the knowledge happens. Kabir has said that I was searching and searching and searching. Now he is found, but the searcher is not. Now he is there, but where is Kabir? The seeker is no more. There have never been a meeting between the seeker and the sought. Never a meeting. Because the two cannot be together. The seeking ends only when the seeker has lost, and only then the sought is found. You are, then he is not. When you are not, then he is. There is no meeting. Or you can call this the meeting. This is the riddle of religious experience, which is unthinkable, unmanifest, the one of endless forms, the ever auspicious, the peaceful, the immortal, the origin of the very creation, the one without a beginning, a middle, and an end, the only one, the non-dual, the all-pervading, the consciousness, the bliss, the formless, the wonderful, is known through meditation. These are just indications, and every indication is a negative. Remember that. Every indication is a negative. He is unthinkable. You cannot think about it. He is formless. He is without forms. He has no beginning, no middle, no end. He is non-dual, not two. All these are negatives. Why use so much negativity for such a positive phenomena as the God? He is the positivity. He is the only positive force. Then why use so many negatives? Without form, without the other, everything that has been used to indicate form has remained always negative. Why? There are reasons. The moment you use a positive word, you create a limitation. If I say that he is beautiful, then the ugly is denied. If I say he is light, then the darkness is denied. If I say he is good, then the evil is denied. Whatsoever I say positively will deny something. To use a negative term is to say that he is so infinite that we cannot use any positive term, because positivity becomes a limitation. So we cannot say he is one. Rather, it is good to say he is not two. It is better to say he is not two. Then he is left totally without any positive demarcation. If we say he is one, then we have encircled him. In meditation, the deeper you go, the deeper you will come to the positive. But when you want to express it, more and more you will have to use negative terms. The ultimate in using negative terms is Buddha. He has used for that ultimate experience the word Nirvana. The Nirvana simply means cessation. He has not used moksha, liberation, because it is positive. It says something. He has not used brahmalok. It is positive. It says something. He has not used bliss, consciousness. These are positive. He has simply said nirvana, cessation of everything, nothingness. And he is right, absolutely right. In meditation, you will achieve a positive experience, but when you are to express it, you will have to use absolute negatives. If we can create a world consciousness about this use of negatives, there will be no fight between religions. Every fight is because a religion has used something positive. This is strange, but one has to understand it. If you use negative, then two negatives are never in conflict. But if you use two positives, then two positives are always in conflict. For example, if Islam says he is one, and Hinduism says he is all, one begins to feel somewhere some conflict. Use negatives, and then there is no conflict. If you say he is not two, then he can be both. He can be one and he can be all. If you say he is not two, he can be both. He can be all. When I say he is not two, I don't deny that he is not all. He can be all. He is not two. He can be all. He is not two. He can be one. In saying he is not two, both the ends, one and all, are implied. If religions are created around negatives, there will be less fight and more understanding. In the West, all the three religions which have come out of Jewish mystics, they have all used positives. Christianity, Islam, and Jewish religion, they all have used positives. That is one of the reasons they are mostly fighting religions. Too much fight, too much arrogance. They have never used negatives. They have used positive terms. A linguistic factor has created so much violence. All the Indian religions have used negatives, more and more negatives. And Buddhism is exceptional. Buddhism has used absolute negatives. That's why Buddhism has been one of the most non-fighting religions. If you use a negative term to indicate him, there is no fight. If you use a positive term, fight is bound to happen. Someone using another, then two positives are always in conflict. Two negatives are never in conflict. That's why one other strange phenomena can be understood. Two atheists will always be in fight, but never two. Two theists will be always in fight, but two atheists will never be in fight. So there are 300 types of theists in the world, but only one type of atheist. What is the reason? Atheist anywhere is the same. What is the reason? The negative. Because he stands only with one statement, there is no God. So how can be there many types of no gods? Only one type, one negative, implies everything. So negative is a universal thing. Atheist anywhere in Tibet, in Germany, in Japan, in China, anywhere, an atheist is simply an atheist. He stands on a negative. But theists differ. Village to village, neighborhood to neighborhood, theists differ. There are so many brands and so many types and so many creeds. Why? The moment you use a positive, you have defined an area and all else is excluded. Unless theists also begin to use negatives more, there will not be a universal relation. If theism also bases itself on a negative definition of the divine, then there can be a universal brotherhood. Meditation leads you to all, but never define it as positive. Always define it as nothingness.